Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast, Securing Edge Devices for IoT. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with our speaker, Tim Scutt from Wind River. Tim is the director, Security Portfolio at Wind River, focused on applying Wind River's secure and safety-critical products to meet customer system objectives. Tim has over 20 years of experience and extensive experience in security and safety partitioning, things like MILS and ARINC 653. He also has skills in secure Linux, virtualization, Android, and real-time operating systems. Today's schedule consists of a presentation followed by Q&A. Before we begin, I want to run down some important features of your viewing console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate today. You can simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the presentation. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A. If you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you could submit those too, and one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. This and all Open Systems Media eCasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. Tim, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Kurt. So as Kurt mentioned, I'm Tim Scutt from Wind River. And if you're not familiar with Wind River, we are a company that provides software infrastructure for the software-defined world. We've been in the embedded software domain for over 30 years, starting with real-time operating systems and including both our proprietary operating system and then with open-source operating systems, middleware, and tools that are around developing software and systems for the embedded environment. Our customers really rely on Wind River products for the types of solutions that just must not fail. So we are in the middle of a transition to a software-defined world, and that software-defined world is being pushed through IoT. What is happening in that software-defined world is that the intelligent edge, which is a domain that Wind River's been in as part of our expertise in the embedded market, is increasingly being connected to higher levels of the enterprise architectures to extract value out of the information and the control that's available at the embedded edge. And so what we're seeing is that the software-defined aspects that have been predominantly part of the enterprise in the past have been progressing further and further toward that edge. And there's some factors that are driving that, such as virtualization and container-based software that's available further and further toward the edge. And that's really unlocking a new era of innovation as we look at the types of capabilities that we can support both at the edge as well as throughout the whole connected ecosystem for the IoT domain. In that IoT domain, there's kind of two major aspects of that connectivity. There's the north-south connectivity, or the connectivity between the edge and the fog and enterprise systems, whether they run in private in IT environments or in the cloud. And that's what we're calling the north-south connectivity. And then there's also east-west connectivity, which is connectivity that's happening within a particular layer, whether it's at services that are at the edge, whether it's services that are in the cloud or in places in between. And that connectivity is really what we're leveraging when we look at the value of IoT solutions. So it can be IoT solutions where value is extracted in the cloud, or IoT solutions such as industrial systems where the connectivity at the edge and interoperation of software-defined functions at the edge creates greater value as things are coordinated more tightly at the edge, and then information is propagated in the north-south links. But as we look at the connectivity that we're introducing and the services that we're introducing in this software-defined world, what we see is that we're also introducing the opportunity for attackers to attack the system. Each node in the topology that forms an IoT service creates potential attack vectors that an attacker can use to penetrate the overall system and exploit it in multiple ways. And we've seen a lot of examples over the last couple of years of how attackers have really pivoted from the predominantly enterprise world of security exploits to a world where they're increasingly compromising devices. One big example that happened that first captured a lot of attention a couple of years ago was the Mirai botnet, where a number of hacked cameras, DVRs, and other devices were leveraged en masse to create some of the world's largest denial of service attacks, and subsequently even brought down large-scale DNS providers and large parts of the internet infrastructure. So it shows the power that IoT devices are bringing to attackers if they can compromise, you know, the volumes of data and the volumes of devices that we're seeing in the IoT space. Another example is recent announcements that we've seen about hackers leveraging financial attacks through things like direct financial attacks against ATMs. And this has spread globally. So, you know, first accounts we were seeing were in Latin America and Europe, and now it's being spread to the U.S. as well, where hackers are essentially using compromised devices to get direct monetary gain. Now, there's also the opportunity in IoT devices to get some indirect monetary gain, and that's another area that we're seeing as well. So it's direct and indirect, where indirect might be something like compromising devices for ransomware or to exploit services for monetary gain. In addition to, you know, kind of the denial of service and financial based attacks, there's the threat of critical infrastructure attacks that are being more and more concerning with respect to IoT devices. And we've seen some major examples recently of these types of risks in that critical infrastructure. An example is the Triton malware, and there's also been examples of the safety systems in industrial control systems being compromised in an overall attack to coordinate and create either operational destruction or disruption of service. You know, and as we start talking about critical infrastructures, that's where it really starts to hit home for all of us when we think about our day-to-day dependence on the power systems, the connectivity systems, water systems that we have in all aspects of our life. And to kind of round out and complete the picture of the risk portfolio that IoT is bringing, you know, we've seen lots of examples of compromise on the IoT level or on the embedded level and how it might impact our day-to-day lives in the devices that we own and operate. A great example there is the vehicle compromises that have been shown over the last few years with progressively more sophistication, where vehicles can be taken over by attackers and basically put into unsafe conditions. And that can expand from vehicles to the systems in our homes and offices, where we have systems all around us that sometimes we're not even aware of that could be compromised and cause, you know, not only safety concerns, but also just the ability to do our jobs and conduct our lives. So clearly, when we look at the examples that we're seeing in the media, there's a lot of inertia and initiative that we need to take behind securing IoT. So the natural question then is, you know, how do we, what kind of approach do we take to secure an IoT type of system? And I think that that approach needs to start with securing the devices and services that form our IoT system. You can kind of think of an IoT system as a chain of many interlinked devices that form the overall service for IoT. And those devices span all the way from the edge devices to routers and communication switches up to the enterprise services and virtual machines in a cloud infrastructure that implement our IoT service. Each one of those needs to be secured because each one is a potential avenue of attack that an attacker can use to compromise the overall service. So we start with securing the links in the chain or those devices and services, and then we secure the communications between those so that an attacker isn't able to interpose themselves into that communication and get into the system. But one of the things that we need to keep in mind as we look at the big picture is that security is changing at a rapid pace. The abilities of attackers to compromise systems, the capabilities that they have available to them, both from computing as well as just general techniques and practices, are changing all the time. And so keeping security up to date through monitoring and management is an important part of making sure that the system not only starts secure but stays secure over time. And that leads us to the kind of fourth area that transcends all three layers, and that is secure processes. All the security technologies that we might incorporate into our systems, if they aren't built in a trustworthy way, can actually themselves become a way that attacker can exploit the system. And we've seen attacks over the last couple of years in the media that have taken advantage of things like antivirus delivery systems to deliver malicious payloads. And so that underscores the importance of having secure processes that allow you to put your trust in the security technologies that you're building in the devices and the communications and in that management and monitoring layer. So as we look toward how we secure the IoT, it's important to have commercial ready solutions in order to support that security capability. And that's where Wind River Pulsar Linux comes into play. That we provide a commercial ready, highly reliable infrastructure for securing the IoT edge that then allows you to build your applications and your IoT systems on top of that secure foundation. An example that shows you how this works in practice can be seen in Wind River's work with Advantech on an Advantech gateway. We support a number of ODM environments, devices with Wind River Pulsar Linux, but we can look here at the Advantech example to highlight some of the key values in this Pulsar Linux solution. Each particular instance, so each device that Wind River Pulsar Linux supports, is tuned to specific use cases and a specific environment. And so here you see a solution that is secure from the silicon up. So it uses secure x86-based hardware with a secure stack from Wind River that provides secure boot, a secure kernel, TPM support, and other support for those secure peripherals and secure silicon solutions underneath. And then on top of that, we support an extensibility framework that allows you to leverage that security foundation with software that you develop and deploy on the secure device foundation. So when you look at that overall picture, then you see that security from silicon through the software up to your services that can be deployed and securely through an extensibility framework using either packages or containers to deploy onto that solution. And addressing, you know, keeping security consistent and up to date over time, Wind River provides a security shield service, which provides the updates for this out-of-the-box commercial-ready solution so that the security of the underlying framework that you're building your commercial-ready solution on is kept up to date using best practices that come from Wind River's long history of support through commercial software. Finally, these solutions tie into IoT frameworks that provide connectivity into a larger ecosystem of IoT functions, such as the Advantech Wise platform as a service type functionality. And there's multiple options that Wind River supports there throughout this Wind River Pulsar Linux ecosystem. So digging a little bit deeper into the overall security posture that comes in Wind River Pulsar Linux, the Pulsar Linux security derives from the security capabilities that we've fielded for over a decade in our commercial grade Wind River Linux product line. And so we've taken capabilities that we've built up through our core Linux, as well as our open virtualization, our carrier grade profile, which was designed for carrier grade networks and resiliency, and our security profile, combine those best in class capabilities into Pulsar Linux to provide that core foundation that secures all the way from the ground up so that you can have trust in the software that you're running. You can have, you can detect attempts to compromise the underlying platform. You can protect your data at rest and data in motion, and you can keep the security up to date. So as you can see here on the bullets in the lower right, you can see some of the foundational capabilities that we incorporate into this to support those use cases, things like that secure boot and secure loading, Linux Integrity Management Architecture, IMA, that gives you the ability to detect unauthorized attempts to change the underlying file system and underlying binary content of the system, as well as communication protection through IPsec, through VPN and firewalls, and then ability to keep to validate through OpenSCAP the security posture and configuration of your system. So on top of that core security foundation, we then provide a package management agent that allows you to extend that underlying framework with the applications that you define through either your own development or through bringing in third-party packages from additional sources. And that package manager agent is the conduit that provides that secure deployment from your development environment through the production environment that you've deployed in the field. And not only do we leverage that for deployment of your capabilities, but really that's the underlying foundation for providing the security updates that come through Wind River's Security Shield. And this is really the underlying framework that you use to leverage the secure infrastructure that comes from our ODM partners, as well as the Wind River Pulsar Linux built with that ODM device to give you that commercial-grade IoT solution that gives you the security capabilities that you need. Now, all these capabilities are supported by the Wind River secure development processes that we put into place that cover the full life cycle of the device and the underlying software infrastructure stack, all the way from initial threat modeling that we do to ensure that all security threats are addressed within the system and identified, through the requirements that we've put into place, and then the implementation and deployment phases of testing and secure delivery that we provide through the frameworks that you've seen before. And we leverage best-in-class tools for the underlying testing and development of all the code that we build as part of Wind River. Supplementing that those development processes is our incident response process. And this was what gives you the overall confidence that Wind River is providing in the long-term support of your solution. We have a robust, mature security incident response process that we put into place, and we've had it in place for a number of years. It's been part of our common criteria evaluations for Wind River Linux. It's been used as part of our VxWorks and other product lines. And in this process, we bring in incidents from a number of different sources, including public lists like the CERT and MITRE database, as well as incidents that are identified by our customers or security researchers. And through this mature process, we have a process for triaging the incoming data and determining the severity and response processes for each individual incident, so that that security shield that we provide as part of Wind River Pulsar Linux gives you that confidence that you can keep that security up to date. And so not only do we have this process in place, and it's been in place for a number of years, but we also have now introduced a CVE database on our website so that you can query the status for each of the CVEs that you have interest in determining the status of, to determine whether they've been mitigated and the current mitigation status for a given version of Pulsar Linux. And you can get a clear picture of the overall security status for the device that you have in place today. As an example of the magnitude that we're seeing and the increase in security incidents across the board, you can see here the trend data that we've been responding to over the last number of years. And so this gives you an example of the data up through 2016, but these trends have continued through 2017, and even, you know, the trend lines are continuing through 2018. And this is a really big part of the overall aspects of keeping your security up to date, is being able to understand what are the incidents that are going to potentially impact your devices, as well as the mechanisms to respond. And this is an area that Wind River has been implementing for a number of years and has been scaling to the thousands and tens of thousands of security incidents that come through either the public lists or private lists that we participate in. And you know, so not only are we handling that volume, but also it's a matter of how long it takes to respond to these incidents. So Wind River is part of a number of embargo lists, and we're able to, in many cases, respond to a vulnerability within 24 hours of something becoming public, because we're part of an embargo list where we get advanced notification of a particular vulnerability and can ensure that we have robust solutions available when that becomes public, so that our customers are protected as they apply those updates. So increasingly, providing the updates and applying those updates is a core part of keeping devices secure. And we've seen that for a number of years in the enterprise domain, where a key practice for providing enterprise-level security in an enterprise or cloud environment is applying patches immediately. That same principle is true for the embedded environment as we start looking toward IoT and being able to ensure that your system is secure by enabling the quick and timely patching of solutions as they're in the field. And so this is a key value that Wind River provides, in that we monitor these sources and provide those security updates so that you can focus on the value that your application brings. So the key question then is how to leverage Pulsar. And that adventure starts with Wind River's website. So at the top level of Wind River's websites, we have a product area, and through that you can access Windows Pulsar Linux. And that's really your starting point in digging into Pulsar Linux and unlocking its value. Following that link, you can start your first step with downloading the software development kits that allow you to build applications on top of Windows Pulsar Linux. And those applications can be built in a host environment, native on your desktop, so that you can do much of your application development without actually committing to an end device. And as we talked about before, the different devices that Windows Pulsar Linux supports, which can be found on our website, each are tuned to different use cases and different environmental constraints, so that you can choose a solution that fits the applications that you're going to need for long-term success. So you start with that SDK download, and you can do much of your application development in an environment that does not require you to commit to an end target platform. And then go ahead and do that application development and testing in that environment, so you can ensure that the business logic for your applications fits together, that the communications are correctly established between different functions, that you can bring in packages that you need in order to provide the capabilities that you want. And then finally, you can select a commercialization platform that will take you through long-term success in your environment. And the SDK and this ability to deploy functions through either containers or deployed packages gives you that ability to take those functions that you've deployed or that you've developed in the software development kit and easily deploy them to the end device using the Wind River framework for deployment of containers and packages. So this is the overall model in putting together a secure device, and we can then leverage that secure infrastructure that comes from the ODM provided devices with Wind River Pulsar Linux to scale commercially and provide you a secure framework that then your applications for IoT can be deployed to. One of the key things in this overall deployment architecture is that you have flexibility, not only in that flexibility in the different platforms that are available, but also in the underlying architecture. We support both x86 and ARM platforms in the ODM community. And so you have that flexibility not only for architecture selection, but also environment and overall ecosystem. So with that, I'll wrap up here, Kurt, and we'll move to the question and answer section.
Great. Thanks, Tim. That's a lot of great information. I want to remind the audience that we are to the Q&A now, and keep sending those questions. We've got a few good ones in, but take advantage of the expertise we have here and the questions you might have on edge security. Let's start with this one. It's about man in the middle. So have there been any provisions to address or deal with man-in-the-middle kind of attacks, considering we have an IoT system that's end-to-end, and perhaps getting one of the elements in that chain to talk with a middleman could be pretty dangerous?
Yeah, so man-in-the-middle is, you know, that kind of that second layer that we talked about in that reference architecture of securing the communications. And that's where Wind River Pulsar Linux provides capabilities for authentication and authorization of communications between the device and other communication endpoints that the device is talking to. So in the overall IoT architecture that you're building out, you have multiple options for that authorization, authentication capabilities that we mentioned earlier in the presentation. And as you dig into the Wind River Pulsar Linux documentation that you can find through our website, you can get a more comprehensive picture of the capabilities. So when you're tying those devices either to each other or to an upstream service, you can select the authentication, authorization, encryption capabilities that you need to provide that communication successfully.
Okay. Yeah, and I suppose just having encryption and authentication kinds of capabilities can help prevent the man-in-the-middle attacks as much as possible.
Exactly. And another part of that I should mention is that prevention of man-in-the-middle attacks and other kinds of communication-related attacks is partially dependent on keeping keys up to date and certificates up to date that facilitate the underlying encryption and authentication.
Right.
And so having this secure update capability allows you to not only deploy your capabilities, but also your credentials to keep those credentials up to date and changing over time allows you to provide a moving target type of defense.
Right, that's a good point. Here's an excellent question. So this might take a whole ECAST in itself, but it's a really good one. We currently have a gateway which communicates with dozens of sensors via Bluetooth. Now, how can the framework you're talking about with all the security things help them in this kind of a configuration? So he assumes Pulsar would be loaded onto their custom gateway, but not the actual sensor nodes. And then there's all sorts of Bluetooth vulnerabilities, I suppose, and the associated issues. So what do you think?
Well, so first of all, Bluetooth is definitely one of the interfaces supported through Pulsar Linux. So we have the underlying software infrastructure to communicate with the devices, and then being able to keep that up to date as we move forward. So the gateway can be used as a means to provide an intrusion detection and prevention system through deployment of a gateway container on top of the Pulsar Linux infrastructure that allows you to introspect the communication that is being, the communication with the underlying devices. So it can be so Pulsar Linux with the ODM device gives you a great framework to do not only the mechanics of the communication, but also provide security for the communication with those Bluetooth devices.
I see. And you mentioned containers, and there was another question trying to get to the specifics of the containers. Are you talking Docker containers, Kubernetes, or is this a different kind of a container environment?
So, yeah, these are Linux containers that are compatible with the Docker framework. So you're building containers that are very familiar with the DevOps community that today uses the container-based model for developing containers.
Got it. Okay. Somebody was asking, just at a high-level overview, what's the difference between Wind River Linux and Wind River Pulsar Linux?
Well, that's a great question. Wind River Linux, the underlying product is you can kind of think of it as a distribution builder kit. So it's designed to be tailored and customized for the nuances of a particular device. Pulsar Linux takes that foundation for a particular use case and packages it up as a set of binary components. So Wind River Pulsar Linux, and I probably didn't call this out as clearly as I probably should have earlier, is a binary version of Wind River Linux that's deployed on a particular device and provides those binary packages. So it takes it delegates essentially the work of building up that distribution to Wind River and the ODM, who then create that binary package that's kept up to date so that you don't have to maintain that as a user. That's maintained as a service for you.
Okay, so it's for those of us who are older, I guess, it's kind of like a version of a board support package then in the IoT realm. Is that fair to say?
Well, I think it's you might view it as something even more packaged than a board support package. It's a full package of the underlying software deployed as a binary. So it comes bundled with the device. It's an out-of-the-box type of solution that is ready to go after you've purchased the device from the ODM. As an example, if you go to Wind River's site for Wind River Pulsar Linux, and there's a list of supported devices that are marketed today, when you buy that device, you get WindRoof Pulsar Linux deployed on that device in binary form, and it's ready to go to have applications deployed on it from the moment you unbox the device.
Got it. Okay. Pulsar systems, are these assumed to be headless, or do you have the capability of adding a web administration piece? And then if so, how do you protect the GUI part?
So Pulsar can be administered through, you know, through an external interface, and that is not necessarily, it's not a web-based interface per se on the device. So it's not a matter of protecting that web-based interface on the device. The device can be, or the administration can be used in a web-based server that's provided as a hosted component in a cloud or enterprise, and then working through the smart package manager to interface with the device and administer the device.
I see. Okay. Great. Again, I want to remind the audience, continue to ask those questions. We're getting some good ones in, but we will have time for some additional ones, so keep the questions coming. How about sensors? Is Pulsar suitable for sensor nodes? Or to a gateway that might connect to the sensor nodes? I think that's its sweet spot, right, is the gateway. But can you put this on sensors?
So Pulsar can scale all the way from very deeply embedded sensors to very high functioning gateways that might be implemented on a multi-core x86, even Xeon class processor. When you look at the examples of some of the platforms that we support today through Pulsar Linux, you'll see things like Zynq FPGA-type platforms, as well as Atom-based platforms, and scaling all the way up to Core and Xeon-based platforms. So this can scale down to a very small footprint device that still provides the value of having that container-based model for deploying your application onto that hardened binary-based interface that WindRoof provides the binary updates for through the Security Shield.
Okay. We talked about authentication a bit. Someone's asking if the authentication is bidirectional.
Authentication can be bidirectional. The capabilities can be leveraged through enablement in our Smart Package Manager. Mm-hmm. So if you go through our documentation to see the capabilities that are available for communication authentication, you'll see a number of different packages that you can add as an integrator, as a developer into the system to provide both, upstream as well as downstream authentication. And then the capabilities also to deploy the required keys and certificates to perform that.
Okay. So let's see. Do all the sensors need to be on Pulsar, or can you introduce other kinds of nodes gradually? How scalable is it?
I'm not 100% sure of the context of the question, but it sounds to me like it might be similar in nature to the Bluetooth question, but adding additional capabilities through different interfaces and having sensors that potentially are not running Pulsar connected to a Pulsar-based gateway. That's a model that we support and is in use by a number of our customers today, where they'll have a variety of different sensors in a particular environment, like in a factory floor that might have some factory-specific interfaces as well as some standard interfaces for serial, and have devices on those kind of dedicated networks that are talking to the device. So not everything in that ecosystem needs to be WindRoof Pulsar Linux, and it gives you that flexibility then to have a proxy for that device deployed as a container if you want to connect it in that manner and have it act as a gateway in and of itself as a separate software container to bridge the sensor into the larger network.
Right. Right. Okay. So it sounds like, you know, at the physical layer, you know, you've got connectivity options that spans as much as Linux spans, right? So you can connect the sensor to physical level, but if there's messaging on top of it, and this kind of leads into another question about application development. If there's messaging on top of it that a sensor is doing, the Pulsar just has to understand the messaging, not necessarily have a Pulsar-like thing on the sensor if it's going to do anything intelligently with the information it's being provided.
That's correct. And it's important to keep in mind that Pulsar is fundamentally an open source-based product.
Right.
So it adheres to open standards for all the interfaces, and so just like you'd expect from Linux, there's the standard capabilities for interfacing to many different device types, as well as many different communication protocols and paradigms.
Okay. All right. Here's another excellent question. So they're having issues with their customers being hesitant to allow new gateways onto their networks, primarily because opening TCP UDP ports through firewalls, et cetera. Do we need to allow a large number of ports open to use and debug Pulsar Linux?
No. In fact, you can actually support Pulsar Linux in a dedicated network that doesn't necessarily have internet connectivity. We have an option to support the patch update and the security shield as a dedicated service on your network, so that you don't actually even have to go through an external firewall and open up ports to the internet if that's an issue. So there's options to have it provided by Wind River through an internet connected update capability, or to proxy that on a local network.
Okay, great. Let's see if I can completely understand this question. So nodes in Pulsar assigned a static role, i.e. sensor versus gateway. Or can they be dynamically changed? So you've got some intelligent edge and sensor devices. Can you move around who's the gateway and who's the sensor and how they're talking to one another? I think that's the gist of the question.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that we have designed Pulsar to be able to do is provide flexibility in deployment of your capability. And that's one of the reasons why supporting containers and package-based deployments is so powerful, is that it allows you to have flexibility in how you deploy those functions onto devices. So, for example, if you were building up an IoT system that included some sensor nodes that were running Pulsar and gateways that run Pulsar, you'd have flexibility in where you deploy those really from moment to moment, in that you can deploy a container or a package to one device, but then have that also then move later on to a different device if the use case requires it. So it gives you some flexibility about the deployment of these IoT functions to the assets that are available in the field. So you have flexibility not only in doing that, but then you can add nodes in later of different classes and change the deployment based on these new nodes that get added in.
Okay, great. So I'm going to lump a couple of questions related to footprint here. One is asking about the footprint of Pulsar based on its certs-based authentication, and I think they're asking kind of from an ODM perspective, what do you install on device and what do you install on the edge, and does Pulsar support edge to, say, IoT hub things? What do you install where? And then the other question had to do with mobile versions, like a mobile version of Pulsar Linux.
So I'll address the second one first. So Pulsar Linux is a binary version of Wind River Linux that is tuned for a particular use case. As far as mobile is concerned, especially, it's not precluded by Pulsar Linux, and we certainly can provide that Pulsar Linux on a mobile type platform and have had experience with significant implementations of WinRAR Linux on mobile platforms over the years. With some mobile platforms, you know, I guess I should back up and say the current set of devices is based on those use cases, and so clearly mobile is a possibility. And I would encourage you to reach out to the Wind River team to discuss options for mobility for Wind River Pulsar Linux.
Right, and I would imagine it. You wouldn't go so far as to say this is like a secure version of Android or something like that. This is not a mobile phone OS. This is targeted toward IoTs and gateways. Is that fair?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Interesting. Let's see. Here's a value proposition question. So someone wants to know if they can convince their customers that using Pulsar Linux Gateway can improve their security. How would you go about doing this for their customer?
Well, so I think the number one answer there is that Wind River Pulsar Linux leverages the breadth of a commercial open source software vendor's practices and processes in providing a secure foundation. So Wind River not only provides the full security stack, but also the incident response and remediation, flaw remediation as that solution is provided over time. So you get best-in-class capabilities for security value that's kept up to date over time by people that do this for a living every day. And the value in that is that you're not relying on a team whose efforts are divided between providing that secure foundation and providing the applications on top of it. So you're getting that commercial grade security stack definition and updates from Wind River Pulsar Linux.
Right. Are you in your experience with IoT applications and systems, are you getting the feel that that businesses and IT-oriented people that are, you know, heavily involved in IoT are getting an understanding of these IoT devices and software platforms being, and they're kind of comparing and contrasting versus what they're working with on the IT back-end pieces? Like, do they understand there's security holes here and this is Linux underneath and those kinds of things? Or are you finding it challenging to get them ramped up versus an embedded engineer who might be more familiar with it?
Well, I think it's definitely there's definitely challenges associated with it. I think the good side of things here is that the industry in general is becoming more cognizant of the aspects of embedded devices in general. As we talked about before, there's a lot of things happening in the media that are highlighting across all of the security community, including the enterprise, the potential issues that are out there for embedded and IoT devices.
Mm-hmm.
And IT staffs are taking notice in pretty significant ways about the potential issues there. One of the benefits of leveraging a platform like Wind River Pulsar Linux is that many of the security capabilities that we build into Pulsar Linux come from an enterprise heritage. And so they are capabilities that the enterprise IT staffs are familiar with. So you're essentially speaking the same language as the enterprise IT staffs are, and that makes it much easier to incorporate these devices into an overall operational network that they are administering. And so that's where there's a lot of value in leveraging a foundation like this, is that for the most part, many of these business-focused IT and security concerns are familiar with Linux at some level, and that's where we can then start from a common foundation where there's an understanding of what happens, and then we can talk about the very specific additional capabilities, additional risks that are that can be mitigated and how they can fit into the overall visibility and administration paradigms for the network.
Okay, interesting. So here's a workload consolidation question. So if someone's got an IoT system where they have separate platforms for, you know, maybe GUI, the controlling pieces with real-time requirements, and they want to merge these using hypervisors and virtualization, what kind of security issues crop up there? And are there any? Is there anything special that Pulsar provides or that they should consider when they're incorporating, you know, security into this new consolidated workload platform?
Well, one of the things that comes up with consolidation is different domains, whether they're different domains of security, whether they're different domains of safety or business concerns. And each domain is typically, you typically want to protect domains from each other so that you can have a level of separation of concerns. And that's where things like virtualization and containers really help out, is to protect those domains. And that's what's one of the fundamental reasons why we built Windows Pulsar Linux the way we did, to support a fundamental container-based deployment model, is to provide that separation of concerns. Mm-hmm. Standard containers provide a certain level of protection from between different containers. The capabilities that we've built into Windows Pulsar Linux that come from our carrier-grade Linux offerings provide additional high resilience and protection capabilities between containers, so that we've actually increased the protection between different containers and allow you to have that separation of concerns at even a higher level of rigor than standard Linux provides.
Okay.
So that's one of the primary aspects that you look at, is separating the concerns at different domains, whether they're security or operational concerns.
Got it. I'm going to lump another couple questions concerning application development. So are there things in the software platform or tools that help with addressing security, maybe like when you're writing the code, when you're building it, when you're testing it, and then if these applications are developed on other open source platforms like Red Hat Enterprise or something, how easy is it to migrate to Pulsar?
Okay. So first of all, talking about the tools, the tools, the software development kit, first of all, does provide a level of protection on the security side of things, and that's through capabilities like signing the packages and containers that get deployed, so that you can ensure the chain of custody and the provenance of a particular container or package, as well as the integrity. We also have, through our partner network, a number of partners that provide capabilities like static analysis and dynamic analysis and testing that you can then tie into that software development kit to provide yet another layer. And as I mentioned, in the Wind River processes, we use those capabilities within our own processes as we develop software.
Okay.
So there's that tie-in in that partner side of things. As far as other capabilities, you know, one of the great benefits of leveraging a Linux container-based infrastructure is that when you build a container on something like Red Hat, you have that flexibility to deploy it onto another system like a Wind River Pulsar Linux, so that provides flexibility to take containers that have been developed under a different Linux and then deploy them into an edge type of environment, so that you have that flexibility in what we call fluid computing, and that's being able to have significant flexibility in where the workload gets deployed,
right?
Whether that workload is defined by a container.
Nice, that makes sense. What about your current capabilities to release binaries for new gateways outside of the list you've provided? Like if some ODM comes to you, what can they expect?
So from an ODM perspective, there's a process by which we engage with an ODM to identify the specific use case and requirements that they have for their device, and then define the relationship that we put together for creating that initial image and sustaining it for the long term. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of you know, engaging with the Wind River Pulsar Linux team to get that initial definition put together, and then the determination of the long-term ecosystem support, where we provide the updates for that for the long term for that ODM.
Okay, and for companies that just have their own platform, they would like to do, how does that engagement model work?
Well, you know, one of the benefits of being tied to Wind River Linux is that customers that have a particular device and they're not really in the ODM camp can work with Wind River Linux, and they can work with the Wind River Linux team to define something that is essentially the equivalent of Pulsar for their specific device. So that gives you that flexibility of getting the benefit of having the binary distribution and the updates provided, but with a different mechanism than the ODM type of relationship.
Okay, and then what about the fees? Do you pay separate fees for software maintenance or any of the security features that are a part of Pulsar?
Well, so the fees are part of any. There are no additional fees beyond what you pay for the device and service through the ODM. So that's the benefit of leveraging something like Wind River Pulsar Linux, is that you truly have that commercial, one point of interface.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. I guess there's another good question. I think I actually read the same thing that they've read about digital twins, where you have systems that you can actually have virtualized versions that you can model the actual system out of, but I guess this kind of folds into the tools package. What kind of tools do you have to do modeling or maybe emulation inside of the system environment? Are those kind of outside and provided by ecosystem partners?
Well, it's some of both. Digital twins cover a pretty wide landscape that can be provided, all the way from providing a digital twin through something like our Simix product, which actually simulates the device and its peripherals down to the executable level, all the way up to a high-level behavioral type of simulation for the system that might be provided by one of our partners through something like a MATLAB Simulink type of implementation.
Oh, okay. Great.
Perfect.
Great. Well, thanks a lot. Unfortunately, we have reached the conclusion of our time here. I want to thank Tim for sharing his insights on IoT edge security. We at Open Systems Media and Wind River want to thank you, the audience, for attending. You've asked excellent questions today, really learned a lot personally, as well as I'm sure the audience learned a lot from Tim. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available there. This and all Open Systems Media eCasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. Thanks for attending, and have a great day.